We'll connect with the October 2nd, 2008 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You've connected with the rain report, available as a free weekly download and podcast from therainreport.com. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN. The Digital Communications Conference we plugged 2 weeks ago went off without a hitch last weekend. RAIN's founder-producer Hap Holly, KC9RP, filled up the RAIN can with interviews from 9 digital devotees that Saturday. We'll run one of them this week, featuring Bob Bruninga, WB4APR, the father of APRS, the Automatic Packet Reporting System. Bob began fooling around with electronics in junior high school and subsequently earned his novice call of WN4APR. While attending Georgia Tech in 1968, he began dabbling with the digital side of amateur radio. Bob picks up the story.
About 1975 or so, I landed in Northern Virginia where the AMRAD group was starting to experiment with teletype and packet radio. So I got involved at the very beginning with bringing AX25 packet radio into this country. You know, it started in Canada. At that time, 1975, I built my first microprocessor. And so we combined the old Model 15 teletype with the microprocessor, and we had the first bulletin board system on the air using FM packet radio on 2 meters. And then by 78, we'd tied in phone lines to it, and so now it was a phone line BBS and amateur radio BBS, and by then we were up to 300 baud. And then I found at Dayton a circuit board in the Mendelssohn's tent that looked like it was a modem, and so I went home and I experimented with it. Although it was originally one half of a 300 baud modem, I could take that, change the capacitors, and now I could send and receive and use that as an HF packet modem. In fact, that's kind of what established the 200 hertz shift on amateur radio for packet, because I started buying those surplus modems from Mendelssohn's and selling them for $20 a piece. I probably sold a couple of hundred to get the initial people on the air with HF packet radio. That's really how packet radio got on HF. We had that tied to a BBS, which was running a microprocessor. Then when the VIC-20 came out, that would be 1983 or so, the VIC-20 was the BBS software and hardware running on these 300 baud modems. So that's how we really got into packet radio, and we wanted to take then packet radio and take it to the field and be able to do something useful with it, not just send and receive an email. The AMRAD organization in Northern Virginia, every year they would support a 100-mile horse race, 100-mile endurance run. We wanted to use packet radio to communicate at that endurance run. Connected packet just was not adequate because we had all kinds of checkpoints and they all needed to share the same information. That's when I came up with the idea we need to get away from connections and be able to broadcast digital information using packet radio. And that was still in the 1983 time frame. And I continued to involve that until about 1990. That's when I shifted from the Commodore 64 to the AT computer, because I noticed everybody else was jumping on board with Microsoft and the AT computer. So by 1992, with a 286 PC, I wrote the first version of APRS. All through the late 80s, it was called SETS, Connectionless Emergency Traffic System, so that you could exchange information without a connection. I remember vividly the night that I was laying there kind of pondering what I was going to do next, when I realized the name Automatic Packet Reporting System would match my call sign. And so I changed it in the middle of the night. I woke the wife up. I said, hey, I'm going to call this thing APRS because that's what my call sign is. And then I published the first report for the DCC conference. That's where we are today now, DCC 2008. So the introduction of APRS was in 1992, DCC in Teaneck, New Jersey. One of my frustrations is that for the last several years, most non-APRS people have gotten a completely wrong impression of what APRS is about. They think of APRS as a vehicle tracking system. You see things on maps that are moving. It's exactly the opposite of what it was designed to do. That's a transmit system. APRS is supposed to be a two-way communication system and an information receive system. The whole concept of APRS is to put a display in front of the amateur radio operator and to show him everything that is going on around him, whether it's a net, EchoLink, IRLP, WinLink, an ATV activity, a hamfest, a meeting, whatever's going on in ham radio, it should be put out a beacon onto this one national channel, and that lets everybody in the whole local area then know what's going on. For example, one of the primary applications is listening to the rain report. Right now, there are people driving around in their cars that are listening to the rain report, and there's probably another 90% of them that are driving around and have forgotten that the rain report is on tonight. So that's what APRS is for. When the SysOp turns on the rain report, he should also send out a packet on the APRS channel, and now all mobiles in the area will see this announcement, rain report, and the frequency, and the PL tone, if necessary. That'll show up right on the front panel of the radio, and the person sees that while he's driving. He says, you know, I'd like to listen to that. On the new radios, APRS radios, he just pushes the tune button, and because the rain report packet showed up on APRS, contains the frequency, now the radio can instantly QSY, and now you pick up listeners. Or when they do the space shuttle retransmissions. You never know when the shuttle's going to be transmitting, so you don't monitor that frequency all the time because there's nothing there most of the time. But if there was a packet that went out each time the shuttle was transmitting, then every mobile sees it right there on the front panel of his radio. So that's what the APRS is. It is not a vehicle tracking system. It is an information receive and display to the mobile operator or the person who needs to know what is going on around him. We've been trying to push this concept of frequency in APRS as well. That was an oversight. We left that out, and we didn't realize that until about the year 2000, which is now 8 years ago. And we said, we need to have a frequency included in every packet so that not only do we know where somebody is, but we know what frequency he's listening to so we can communicate with it. That's what ham radio is all about, is two-way communications. And how can I communicate with this icon on this map if I don't know what frequency he's on? That was another one, these light bulbs that went off. And so since 2002 or so, I've been saying, we've got to get frequency transmitted with position in every packet. Nobody uses my software anymore because mine's written in BASIC and the maps are very crude. I still use it, but it's not up to current standards by any means. And so I cannot come up with a new idea and put it into my code. I have to talk somebody else into putting it into their code. So I've been talking about putting frequency in APRS now for 6 years. And finally, last year, Kenwood put it into the D710. And that is what is so new about the new Kenwood D710 radio, is that it's a dual band radio. And so one side of the radio is doing APRS and the other side is your voice side. So now, every time your radio transmits a position report, the frequency of your voice side of the radio is now included in your packet. Now, everybody can see what frequency you're listening on, even if you're dialing the radio around. So that's how the frequency information gets transmitted. Now, on receive, if the Kenwood D710 radio receives a packet from somebody that has frequency included, now that frequency is displayed right on the front panel of the radio. So now the radio displays whose packet just came in, where they are, how far away they are, what direction they are, and now what frequency is on. So that's the next step in the process. And then the final thing that they put into the radio is a tune button. So now if somebody's packet shows up on the front panel of my radio and it has a frequency in it, I can just with one finger push the tune button and the radio will instantly QSY to that frequency and to the tone and we'll be able to communicate. So now that we have a radio that can instantly tune to a frequency that's included in a packet, we've now, for the last 4 years, tried to get every community to get together and decide what is the most important frequency for a traveler in that area. What frequency would you recommend that a traveler use? And then put out a beacon on APRS with that frequency in it. So now, again, if I drive into, where are we, Elk Grove near Chicago? If I drive into this area, as soon as I get in range of that recommended frequency, it will start showing up on the front panel of my radio. And since that packet is only transmitted direct, simplex, I will not receive that information until I am in range. So if one of these shows up on the front panel of the radio, again, all I do is push the tune button, and I'm instantly in communications with the local area.
That's with the Kenwood D710 radio.
Yes.
Is that the only radio set up for that?
Well, the rumor is Yaesu announced at Dayton this year that they're coming out with an APRS radio. VX8R, I believe.
Yes, 8R.
They say that it's going to have all of the features of the original Kenwood D7. That's a walkie-talkie radio, by the way. And so we're all excited to see what capabilities are going to be in that radio.
You're listening to an interview with Bob Bruninga, WB4APR, considered the father of APRS, the automatic packet reporting system. We'll resume Hap Holly, KC9RP's interview with Bob in a moment. This is the Rain Report.
In in 2001, my big presentation at Dayton was that we can do APRS on any radio by touch tone. The concept is that just like, you know, your teenager can text message your call sign, you can put that into a touch tone memory on your walkie-talkie, even if it's a 30-year-old ICOM 2AT. It did not have message memories, but you put your call sign in DTMF into a message memory. And now, when you come into an area, all you do is you push transmit DTMF memory number one. That maybe that's two key presses. And DDDDDDD, your call sign goes out. And people say, well, that's just a call sign. No, that's almost everything that APRS is, because the instant you sent that, number one, we know your call sign. Number two, we know the date and time. Number three, we know what frequency you transmitted it on, because the device that received it knows what frequency it's on. We know what tone you were using. In addition, the device that receives that, maybe a repeater, or maybe it's an Echolink node, maybe it's an IRLP node, so it has information. So you take nothing but the call sign, and then you add all of this other fixed location information that is relevant to the APRS touch tone decoder that received it. You add all that, put it on APRS, and now you show up on the worldwide APRS map with all the information that any other APRS operator does, and yet you use just the walkie-talkie that you've had for the last 30 years.
That has great applications if your radio is stolen.
Yes, it would, actually, now that you mention it. The only thing that's missing is the position is not all that accurate. All we know is the position of the repeater where you were. But if you're traveling across country, we can track you all the way across country because we know what repeater you are. But it's actually simpler than that, and that is APRS was never about vehicle tracking and position reporting. It was a communication system to keep you informed of the tactical situation. So this touch tone information, which is just a call sign, now, like I said, has all that other information put on it by the repeater that heard it, but it does have to put a position into it in order for it to show up in the APRS. So all it does is it increments the latitude by a tenth of a mile for every touch tone user it hears. And so what you'll see when you look at the APRS map, you'll see a repeater, let's say it's the 14694 repeater, you'll see that on the map, and then you'll see a list of call signs above it on the map that show all of the touch tone users who have checked in. And so I don't call this really transmitting APRS using touch tone. I call this checking into APRS by touch tone.
But if a repeater is set up with certain touch tone command, would this wreak havoc with that?
Yes, it could. That triggers two ideas. See, I've been talking about this for 8 years, and I built a working system back using DOS, but the only reason I built the system using DOS back in 2001 was to inspire somebody to do it on Windows with a sound card, because mine had to use a hardware decoder, and I had to manually build the voice synthesis. The idea at Dayton of this year, 2008, was, wait a minute, every repeater in the country understands touch tone and has a voice synthesizer. IRLP and Echolink nodes, everyone in the country understands touch tone. Why don't I approach those authors and ask them to simply add this call sign reception, and then since they're all tied into the internet or whatever anyway, and all that hardware is in place, just convince those authors to add this function. But then the problem that you suggest came up, and that is, well, every repeater has a different control code and everything else, and we probably don't want to have everybody randomly sending out DTMF. And so probably what we're looking for is a simplex frequency that would be relatively benign, that you won't interfere with anybody else. But more importantly, the original concept of APRSTT was not for this general traveler. It was for when you set up, like at a marathon, and you've got 100 ham radio volunteers out there, and you've got the APRS map at the EOC, and you can see where 10 of those 100 operators are, because those are the 10 that are using APRS, but you cannot see where the other 90% are. Somebody reports by voice that they're at the corner of 5th and Vine. Well, who's going to remember that 5 minutes later? So the purpose of APRSTT was to serve an event. So you set up this simplex receiver at an event, and you tell anybody, when you move from that checkpoint, you send in your call sign, and then you punch B, which means position, and 35. And that means I just moved to checkpoint 35. So it gives a method for other volunteers that are not APRS hardware equipped, but to still indicate that they're participating, where they are, they're alive, and what frequency they're on. So that's where we're at today. There were a few repeater manufacturers who said, hey, that's a good idea. Keep me informed, because again, they didn't want to invest the time until we see that it takes off. 1 week ago, I got an email from an individual in France who said, we've done it, it works great, and we'll finish it it up and send it to you. Wow. And everybody will be able to download it and add this tremendous capability. The number one thing that this adds to is that the whole concept of APRS is to get the human operator to be able to exchange the information with the other human operator. It has nothing to do with vehicle tracking. We've added frequency so that now everybody knows what frequency somebody is on. With the APRS touch tone interface, now everybody can check in. And when you check in, now everybody in the world knows where you are, what frequency you're on, and we could call you. Because imagine if you check in and the APRS touchtone device that receives that packet is in simplex range of an Echolink node. That Echolink node number will be automatically inserted onto that packet. So when you check in with your touchtone, now everybody in the world can see what Echolink node number to call you on.
This has great implications for emergency communications.
Absolutely. In fact, the thing that really pushed us over the edge on adding frequency to APRS was Katrina, because out of Katrina came the ARRL initiative to say we have to have a system for keeping track of what frequency everybody is on. We got volunteers everywhere. It's crazy. We're ham radio and we can't figure out how to contact them. That was APRS response to Katrina, was let's add frequency in every packet so now we know what frequency you're on.
If someone wants more information, where should they go?
Within this last few months, we've finally gotten the website APRS.org. And so if you can just remember APRS.org, you can read for the next 3 years then links about APRS. But everything that's new shows up there first.
Bob Breninga, WB4APR, the man behind APRS, the Automatic Packet Reporting System. He was interviewed at the 2008 Digital Communications Conference in Chicago by Hap Holly, KC9RP. If you'd like information as to how to use your APRS station for real-time beaconing of special programming carried on your local repeater, i.e. the Rain Report, Newsline, etc., see the sites mentioned page on therainreport.com for Bob Breninga's link that will show you how. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2008 Rain. All rights are reserved. Now for Rain's founder-producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.